This is a production of Cornell University.
It is 4:46 on October 30th, and the student assembly meeting is called to order. Chelsea, whenever you have a moment, could you please call the roll? Agenda is the approval of the October 23rd, 2014 meeting minutes. Are there any amendments and motions on the floor?
Motion approved.
There's a motion to approve. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, I'm going to ask the to call this by unanimous consent. Is there anyone who dissents to that? Seeing none, this passes by unanimous consent. Moving on to open microphone with Executive Vice President Tisha.
Hello, to anybody in the audience who isn't aware, open microphone is a chance for any member of the Cornell community to address an issue of concern to the student assembly. Just come forward to the table, state your name and year. And seeing none, we're going to close open microphone.
Great. So I think we're still waiting for maybe one more person for the Cornell University's response to Ebola. Is that correct? Okay, so for now we'll move on to announcements, and then as soon as the third person is here, we can start. Our first announcement is open course evaluations announcement by Representative Friedman. Next is a Community Life Committee update by Representative Johnson. Communications Committee update by VP Warshaw.
Additionally, do you remember the Froyo Outreach event that we had a couple weeks ago? We're
kind of a graphic design to take all of that information and compile it into a chart that will kind of distribute to all of you so you guys have more ideas of, you know, different kind of initiatives that students really care about and want you all to work on. And also think about organization spotlights. So if you remember, we had COS ideas or organization spotlights, so think of more organization spotlights after the month of November. And if you guys have any ideas, feel free to send them my way. I would love to talk to you about it or talk to them about what they do. And lastly, we're going to have our Big Red Bear photo shoot next week, not this week. Sorry for everyone who thought it was this week. Touchdown had a little bit of complications with the bear suit, but it'll be all set for next week. So that's it from me.
Great. Next is an internal elections announcement by Lindsay Henderson.
Hi everyone. We'll be having a brief internal elections after this meeting. It shouldn't take too long, but we're looking for an undergraduate to serve on the search committee for the provost and also the search committee for the vice president for student services and campus life. So it should be quick, but make sure to stick around after.
Next is a Cornell Cinema appropriations report by Deacon Sebastian.
Yeah, so I'll just do both of them quickly. Cornell Cinema getting some of the byline funding from you on Monday. Generally speaking, we are pretty happy with their ability to reach out very early on. They're always pretty receptive to, you know, conversations. There was some concern with the committee that there was not as much student involvement as we would like to see given the amount of funding that we give them. There's also a very huge lack of analytics that they use in their business, which given the amount of money that they're running through, they should have some more of a plan. So we're doing a couple of changes to solve those sorts of things. If you're interested in cinema and you're not on the appropriation committee, let me know, because there's a lot of big changes that I think we'll be making with them in the semester. I'll also do the labor roundtable special projects report, so that sounds cool. So the labor roundtable came and requested $750. So as long as the appropriations committee approves that, it's able to, you know, go through because of the amount of money that it's asked for. The labor roundtable is planned by a group of primarily IFR students. But the event is not exclusive to IFR students. They bring in labor activists, labor experts, nonprofit leaders, etc., to, you know, talk with students in a roundtable sort of setting. There was adverse circumstances that impacted their ability to receive funding this year, and it's been a, you know, annual event for the past 12 years. The appropriations committee thought that being able to support that event was really important, especially considering it was, you know, started by students and it's appropriate for students. If you have any issues with the decision, let me know. Unfortunately, you can't return to the student assembly. If you have issues with the decision, I'm more than happy to discuss it so that if it does fall to occur in the future, if you have that.
Great. We could move on into new business for just a few minutes until 5 o'clock. So first would be Resolution 24.
Done events to reach out to constituents that you were elected to represent. And over the last several years, this wasn't really enforced because whenever a member would reach the attendance limit, the past practice has been that the exec board would discuss it in regular meetings and take a vote on whether or not that member would meet their seat. And so I have a problem mainly because we as a body should be following our government regarding documents very closely. And to have an informal process like that, and meet someone who can keep or lose their seat, I think there's a lot of grounds for abuse for the process like that. And that is the main motivation for coming up with something formal, getting it in writing, and something like that. I'm going to pass it over to George to talk about some of the changes that we had with this resolution as compared to one a couple of weeks ago. Because like the main difference, well, so the main issue of the resolution as a whole, just to the executive committee the ability to self-manage in order to avert efficiency. And then we added a few more points that you're going to talk about.
So we're going to launch the union, so just to point out that that's by secret ballot, if you have no question on if somebody contacted somebody else, it doesn't work very exciting. The biggest thing that we added to this was bringing in the conversation about representative supplemental access to represent the restricted constituency, because obviously if you're not in your state, you can change your constituency, you can lose your voice through your name, so like what else are you trying to do that helps represent? And I also just wanted to go back to the point about how right now we have nothing in place. If you get your maximum absences, pretty much before people are going to their own way, but it was written how it was written, pretty much saying what we're going to do that. And then when we voted down the resolution the last time, you can wait for saying that you don't want to be able to have a conversation with the person you have absolutely no way.
Yeah, and the other thing I forgot to mention was it's an absence plain symbol. If you were to make no distinction for this kind of policy, that's the only difference is proxy voting. And also, if you're ready to have your absence, I know it's generally changed other things, so that it doesn't block you like keeping it late or something similar to that, it would be a half absence. But I think the main rationale for doing this, I looked at the numbers 3 days ago. If you have two absences at this point, you're on track to lose your seat over the course of the entire year. And so currently, 7 people are on track to lose your seat. And I don't think there's 7 members that deserve to lose their seat or haven't been made enough to represent the constituents. I think it's completely reasonable that people have a limited holiday, have to travel, or other things that come up, and you may get understandable that you could have a couple of huge
questions. Great. So we're actually going to hold off on questions on this, and if you'd like to be on the speaker's list later, let me know. Right now, we're going to move on into the next item on our agenda, which is Cornell University's response to Ebola. The administrators that are coming to talk to us today include Joel Molina, the Vice President for University Relations, the MIT IMT lead, Frank Cantone, IMT Coordinator, Associate Director of Emergency Management and Business Continuity for EH&S, and Dr. Kent Bullis, Medical Director, Gannett Health Services. And thank you all so much for your time, and we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say, and everyone here can feel free to ask questions whenever they're done.
Thank you very much, Sarah, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today to talk a bit about our Ebola preparedness effort. By way of a formal introduction, I'm Joel Molina, Vice President of University Relations. I'm currently the Director of the Ebola Response, part of the IELTS National Program. To my right is Frank Cantone, Frank is also the Associate Director of Emergency Management and Business So just by way of some introductory remarks, if you want to talk to and share the effort, I just want to say up front that all of the Cornell following the development of the outbreak quite closely. We do have concern about the impact of the disease on thousands of people in West Africa, as well as the recent cases both in the U.S. and in Europe. Locally, with our partners here in Johnson County, we are extremely well prepared in terms of educating and protecting our campus and the larger community and to respond immediately and effectively in very unlikely events that a case of Ebola were to be confirmed here in Johnson County. We do feel good about being part of a strong coalition of regional healthcare safety, academic, and first response experts who have dozens and dozens of years of experience in jointly managing public health and safety issues. To talk a bit now about the structure here at Cornell with which we are approaching our effort on this front, I'll describe in general terms our overall management structure, which we have in some greater detail to the extent that we have interest to you. But we do have a group of senior leaders that develop strategies to engage, train, and expertise of the divisions and individuals across the university according to a carefully managed plan that promotes and protects the health and safety of our campus community. Ultimately, it's the president and the provost who do have the responsibility for management of a university emergency. But for each potential emergency, we do establish what is known as an IELT, which is the Incident Executive Leadership Team, of which I am chairman of the IELT on Ebola. And the members of that IELT include, in addition to myself, Professor Fred Lodeval, Senior Vice Provost for International Affairs, Janet Corson Reicher, the Executive Director of Internet Health Services and the Associate Vice President of Internet Health, and then other executives joining me include Vice President Q. Wong, Susan Murphy, Mary Allen, and our University Council, Jim Mingle. We work at the IELT in close partnership, in close daily partnership with the IMC, which is the Incident Management Team, which is being overseen by Frank. And that is the group that on a day-to-day basis is directing the emergency support across the university. I think Frank will now talk a bit about the social function of the IMC, including the essential work of Dr. Willis and the other partners in that community. So, Frank.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank you for providing the opportunity for all of us to address you today. So we've thrown a lot of action in the direction of so the IELT is what we are addressing three forms of policy at the university. And the organization that I'm supporting right now is the management to really act on that policy and provide the data for the activity. So since this summer, the university has been planning in some fashion for something that we're going to do at the university. So during the summer, for example, our risk management folks and the international travel and relations team has been coordinating and monitoring the travel of Cornell folks to affected areas, and also closely monitoring the CDC warning, the travel warning, and alert. And since the events became progressively worse in West Africa, the CDC put into effect travel alerts. And so, coincident with that, the risk management and international travel team put into place a travel restriction that you probably heard through the news. And that's been in place since late summer. So individual departments like the NET, environmental organization, have been doing their own planning for events for some time. And things started to get, as I mentioned, a little worse in West Africa, and certainly in the first case in Dallas, things became more acute, you know, when it comes to the US tour. So we put into effect an emergency operations plan at that point in time. So, before I go any further, the reason we're putting the emergency operations plan in place is not because we have a crisis in the U.S. and certainly not a crisis here at the Cornell University, but it was put in place to facilitate the planning process. And that's part of the planning process is putting together an emergency management team. Now, the incident management team has individual, what we call emergency support functions. So we have health services. So what happens is we have some material, students who are coming back and traveling. We have communication services on our team to assess what's going on in the local community, local national, and be able to provide various communication messages out to campus. We've got public safety in our department who's concerned with movement of waste that might be generated from the building and types of material support. So the various emergency support functions that those people who participate in are be very dependent on the type of movement. So we've implemented the IMC for the last 2 weeks now, and those emergency support functions come to our weekly meeting. We talk about issues that we need to address, and we put together various aspects to facilitate things that need to be done. So that's where we are right now, working with the community emergency support functions to go through our task list so that we can prepare. And again, this whole effort is strictly for preparedness and not because of the vision of anything happening anytime soon, but it's part of my department's emergency management is to facilitate that preparedness effort. And so that's where the university is right now, and as I mentioned, going into the dictation of the policy, and part of that policy is implementing these different emergency support functions.
I would say, echo Frank and say thanks also for the invitation to come talk to you about this. The efforts that the management community, on the efforts of the community facilities, following the free very system that some of we have reached out to those students who have either personal or academic ties to West Africa and have offered support to them and information then about the resources we have available. The system manager continuously remaining in contact with them so that we can be aware of any plans that they may have or might be in contact with those who became their practice on the West Africa and advise them about any risks to themselves and any risks to the community and help them make good decisions about that. We have put in place policies and procedures to get the information out to the community and encourage community members to contact us if they become aware of any risk for exposure to Ebola or travel to West Africa. And we have put in place policies and procedures so that if someone can walk into the network and identify any risk for Ebola, we'll be able to respond for paying promptly in a way that would protect the safety both on the staff and the community. Practices can be made changes that you all may perceive if you have someone who's connected, but as we have other interactions that we have, whether it's someone's walking in the door, we have to ask them about travel history. And we've done that in selected circumstances in the past, but not necessarily with everybody that walks through the door. And our concern is that you don't want to have someone walk through the door for something that seems to be very much an unrelated problem and then find out that they've been there for some time and then say, a risk for people in the man has placed others at risk. So those are the three primary things that we're doing. I'm happy to talk about this in the future. But that's my question.
Great. So does anyone in the audience or any student assembly member have a question? First is Vikram.
This is actually because so I have very good one is the people of the goal of the intermediate. The more that I go to the outside, the more that I go to the actual group, or I go to the I'm going to use this word, specifically not that I see the goal of all the time, because it's not that big of a problem. People speak up and they talk about something, and then they talk about Ebola. Ebola is not a lot of problem, it's not a problem. Tuberculosis is a problem, things are bigger, much, much more significant diseases that we can accept. My question is, and I'm asking that question to pay attention for you, like, you talk about that, we should have enough information to not be thought about it. And this is often, you know, just how can we get this, like, really complicated, and, like, what is just knowing that this is not a good thing? No, it's just stop worrying, like, well, stop telling that the others do not go home. You know, it's just a misinformation, and that's the community, number one, number two, of how we direct it. I know the community obviously has been a support, like, special from the board of trustees and higher people who don't want to support me than I am. About, you know, measures to get Ebola, but as I'm an engineer, I really think we just use these resources for mental health, for alcohol abuse, for you get the checking and going. And that's kind of what we see. And I think that we need to shut up about Ebola, you know, right? And I know it's a fact of Ebola, but thank you for this. Because we need to stop thinking about, I'm going to get our sanitation system. 100 times more than the sanitation system. If you get a goal and you have to change the system, I'm sorry, you're getting much more than that. It's horrible. It's something close to the sophistication of the and America can be like that as a country. And we need to know that. My whole thing is like, say that, no, that is a situation which is preparing to be on one of the most, you're upstate New York, you know, this is one of the most secure environments.
Jacob, I'm sorry, your time is up.
My question is, do you think that you have a problem? More importantly, do you think it's possible?
Unless I'm on, okay, great. You guys can respond.
So from the perspective of the demand, it is something frustrating to feel compelled to devote the amount of resources we have to do something which is very unlikely to occur here. But we also feel compelled that we need to be prepared in a small chance of public good. So we're trying to be responsible about the way we use resources, but yet also have a good plan for it. It is certainly the case that we both just want to be two decades ago, just very difficult ideas that are because of our common problems. We've already seen some of that. One of the ideal things about people from a public health control perspective is that so many of the diseases that we have trouble dealing with are infectious to others before people develop symptoms and before they even know that they're sick. Ebola is something which is not contagious and infectious until after someone develops symptoms. When you look at the cases that have occurred here in the United States, they have a certain number of members that have time with the patient before they go to the hospital. They have an emergency contact or even emergency responders. The transmission has occurred in very late stages of development of the care. We see these diseases different from the there's much more intimate contact between people that are very ill at the end of life. And so we can learn much, much, much more about this to see anything like this happening in the United States the way it
proceeds. Great. Next on our speakers list is J.P. Henderson.
Yeah, thank you to all three of you for coming. My question is, what's been the impact and response to the travel restrictions from students and faculty so far? If it's had any impact or response from those parties?
So, currently, in place of students, it's always been in place that they had to apply to the international travel and international relations program in order to make any international travel. So that really has not impacted students much because they have to go through the normal process. process. We have had some impact on some research that's been in the affected area. Individuals who might have agricultural relationships, collaborators in affected countries. So it has impacted those programs to some degree. What we hear about now is still fairly minimal impact on individuals. And travel restrictions are not absolute. If you have a team to travel to such area, it will be reviewed by your amendment about international relations to determine whether of an immediate outbreak.
Next is Representative Vasquez.
I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk about this issue. My question is, so Cornell is a medical center in New York City. In the Middle East, it's one of the best medical institutions in the world. Are there efforts by members to treat or curtail this outbreak of Ebola that's starting to come about in the United States?
Well, let me start by emphasizing that we are in quite close coordination with our colleagues at the Medical College. As you may know, New York Presbyterian is one of the main hospitals that's been designated by the state of New York to respond to the emergency. So we very much consider our colleagues there to be the first responders, and we want to give them the support that that we believe they deserve. We are ensuring that when Cornell in Ithaca is speaking to this issue, we want to make sure it is in line with that while Cornell is speaking. In terms of our ability to be more on the front lines of aid and assistance on the ground, I would expect that there are a number of individuals who are committed to putting their personal time toward it. I'm not aware of any that have come across my desk. Certainly, to the extent that those individuals would be interested in devoting that time, they would need to clear that work with the processing that Frank had outlined. But suffice it to say, throughout the Cornell community, there is widespread recognition that we are not just active observers to protect our community, but rather global citizens to try to ensure that we're part of a global solution. What is truly a crisis and what happens.
I will address the more study. This seems to me that we have a relationship that most of the countries that I have seen come through my board at the time of the meeting have not really been concerned about the personal risk of people, that they've been concerned about the perception of those around them, that they have picked up on a certain amount of ill-informed concern on those around them, that they must be meeting with them. And I think it's very important for all of us in the community to be aware of this and to not be prejudicial about those from Western Africa or those who might look like they're from Western Africa and consider them to be a threat to us and think of that message out to those records.
Next is Representative Dow.
Hi, I'm Charlie from North Carolina. My question is that next year I'm going to be studying abroad in London for 1 semester. I was wondering if because of the difficulty of COVID right now, are there going to be any changes in terms of how people are treated for traveling abroad?
Can't forget that it's unlikely that traveling to go to Italy is going to be viewed with the same kind of scrutiny as someone traveling through the affected areas and West Africa. So we don't necessarily anticipate any changes in that regard. But as I mentioned before, any international travel will have to be cleared through the International Relations and National Travel Office. Right now, I personally don't.
This is EVP Batista.
Excellent. Thank you both, or all of you, for coming today. I really appreciate talking to the students about this issue. I know as students we received an email about EBLO and how Cornell plans to respond. This poster and other things like that, is there anything else that you all plan to do through the IMT group to quell students' concerns, whether that be, you know, cultural and accepting other students on campus or about the actual risks for students on this campus?
Well, I'll start by just speaking to the community-wide email. When my email team gets together on a regular basis, among the discussion items we talk about is that question, is there a need for additional communication? Our goal is to walk the fine line and make sure that the right amount of information is out there without unnecessarily raising panic. We believe that at the time, 2 weeks ago, when we didn't send out that email, it was the appropriate time to do so. As of now, we can't anticipate the need for another communication, but that could change, in which case we'll send out whatever appropriate additional info we feel is most needed. In terms of planning for other flyers, I don't know whether Gannett has anything planned or whether.
For us, this is ongoing consideration on almost a day-to-day basis, and it's just a time to get more concrete
plans
for
that meeting.
Thank you. Vice President Bondari. Just kidding.
We did talk about the communication issues within the IMC meeting this morning, and the consensus was that we didn't want to necessarily communicate with the felt there was a need or there were changes in place, and that would be the time and decide what type of communication to go out. But that said, hearing from you guys, do you feel there is? And if there is, what do they regard as a decision?
Okay, so does anyone want to respond to that? I'll take a second to look through that. Representative Friedman?
I'll speak really quickly, but I think from my perspective as Cornell students, I don't think you're dealing with the same sort of population that you might be dealing with in just the general United States population. I think most educated students who spend, you know, even a second reading on the New York Times or, you know, with the materials that you sent out, they understand that Ebola is not a threat. And I think that, you know, in the vein of what Fixman said, or Representative Griswold saying, and Representative Friedman, I think that I would appreciate if resources are directed more towards issues that I see all the time, you know, alcohol abuse, you know, things like TV even, you know, things like that, than where they're being directed. And if they are being directed towards bullying, the responses should be more in the vein of, you know, how are we, you know, educating people? How do we make sure that there's not this sort of racialized sense that people are, you know, talking about Ebola? And, you know, not that preparation shouldn't be in place. It's great that you're doing that, but I mean, all the things that you're talking about, putting together these, you know, executive teams, I can just think of the millions of, you know, things that, you know, other students would want out of Cornell and a team that, you know, comprises so many top officials. And it's, you know, it's a little bit concerning that, like, you know, knowing how well it is just from reading a few articles, that we're just, you know, investing so many resources into it, just in a lot of ways, in terms of this area.
I mean, I have a response to both of those points. Really emphasizing the positive, not so much that this incident response mechanism uses up the resources, but the fact that we have this infrastructure in place where we can tap into such diverse experts throughout the campus. I'm the head of the university response team. It is not taking up a large part of my time. I am in a position where there's a need my time, I'm giving it. I don't want you to think that you spend hours every day pouring over a list of things to do. No, we are appropriately focused on the potential needs and take great comfort in knowing that this infrastructure is in place should it be needed. Now, certainly Frank and his efforts, it's a bit more, a little bit every day. But I think, again, he and his team are learning will carry through and can be applied to any number of other issues and other requirements we're preparing through the remainder of your time. This is not the first IELT and IMC to be established on campus. They've been established quite frequently, and they've been again, serving the function of just making sure that preparedness is approached from a calm, perspective as opposed to being rushed and being behind the curve. So I would like to think that this is something that we should take comfort in. We certainly do not want to stop in this area, but we also would like to follow the pulse of the public debate. I don't know whether your parents are more concerned than you are. We have heard of some parents sending communication messages, whether it be the president's office or others. There's a certain level of unknown and fear when loved ones are farther away and they don't have a sense of how this is being approached on campus. So I would expect that an email, for instance, which talks about all of the preparation, does serve the function without giving people cause for concern that we're spending too much time.
Once a year, on the slow day, I remind all the staff that this is one different practice for any kind of math kind of view or math issue. I'm going to be on the day that I'm taking care of students this whole day. When we are sitting there talking about my goal, one of the things in the back of me of our mind is that this is just pretty cool. This is a really good day-to-day experience for us to refresh our skills and practice our skills related to people using response and so on. So, as an administrator, I'm certainly working very hard to make sure that we could command value and understand that.
Next is, did you guys
agree? Yeah, I appreciate your concern. I'm not sure this is perhaps an appropriate forum for us to address that, but I'd like to echo previous comments that we're using this opportunity to look at least from our perspective, look at what it would be public health and what it would be communicable disease. So for example, our EMS is perceived EMS that is facilitated or advised by our department. We're taking this opportunity to look at good infection control practices. We're in time where we've got people who have flu because of the flood from getting to each other. But we have people who present with employment, we have people who present with other upper respiratory issues that have the potential to be communicable. So it's a good opportunity for us to, we use Ebola as a sort of platform, but it's a good opportunity for us to expand it and refresh it and about how we do business on a moment basis. I know that doesn't exactly to put it in a positive light, that they have to do that.
Next is Vice President Worsham.
Actually, speaking to the point you just kind of addressed, it's like how does Cornell in the past kind of reacted to significant outbreaks or even just like things that have kind of caused issue, like both taking Cornell with a reactive and a proactive approach. So like what would you say, like, and how that kind of relates to what's going on right now and how you're reacting to Ebola?
I'm sorry.
I'm more just like in the realm of how like Cornell has reacted to other kind of outbreaks or incidents in the past. Obviously, like I remember like the swine flu, like it's not the same thing, but you know what Cornell's approach was to that, and if you're using like similar mechanisms now.
That's good to know because our current functioning in the emergency operations plan is really based on the premise of a number of years on how we're approaching this current event is very similar to what we implemented before. And, you know, proactive versus reactive, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to do now. Step in place for that. If something were to happen, although it's unlikely if something were to happen, we're not reacting in a way that we're trying to plan for that. If it's not what's happening, we can better accommodate with resources and our approach. So, you know, we're gathering this and we're following similar functions that we had a number of years ago.
So it's actually 5:30, and I know we told you that we would only keep you here until 5:30. So if you guys are willing to continue the conversation, that would be great. But we should probably keep that fairly limited. What do you want to do?
I'd like to have you stay for a little longer. I'm going to put some of the time in
Okay, so why don't we do two more questions, especially if there's someone in the audience who has a question, it would be great if you could let me know if you would like to ask it. And otherwise, would it be all right if our members could contact you via email with other questions? All right, that would be great. So the first person is Vice President Bhandari.
Hi, thanks for coming and speaking really so my question is kind of wondering if the SA or just students as a whole, if there's anything that we can do to help your efforts in terms of, you know, programming, anything like that, if there's like things that we as a body can help with.
I think part of what we talked about in buying online teams as leaders is to really define take the temperature of the community in which we work and educate, and really tone these methods at a low level, tone it down, but really understand our complexities and wondering, you know, what are some of the issues that people are being impacted. And that's part of the question I had before, what it is that, you know, we're doing things that may or may not meet your needs. And, you know, I'd also have a question that, what it is that you want to do. We certainly could be involved. There are plenty of things that, for example, I'll be selfish on an IT and that we're putting together that certainly need some additional assistance. So, you know, I'm for any sort of collaboration. And instead of reaching out to you guys, are there specific needs to see if you've heard from them as well as resources? Impact, but there are other things that you see there are great needs. And as a student body here, I think the message that you communicate as a group really does impact the rest of the student body. And I think your responses, your tone, your message, I think that's going to reflect well in the student body to decrease some of the anxiety and fear. So as leaders, I would put the challenge out to you as a community with your body, your student body, and you know, take a second. How do you think things evolve in your student body? You have to you are the leader. Can you communicate that in a professional manner to the
Great. So last question of the day goes to Representative Tayal.
Thank you for being here. So my first question was actually an expansion of the question D.P. Henderson asked, which is something that others have come up to me asking about. How have studies abroad programs been affected by your directive? And what steps is Cornell taking to ensure that there are no financial or other burdens upon students who had committed to a study abroad in a country that is under the same travel motion?
I can't define specifically, but I'm not aware of any impact other than the current travel over the country. So right now, I don't see that there's any impact that I'm not positioned to push to answer that. But right now, we have not talked about any other impact to other areas. So that's something we can actually bring to talk to, whether there might be any impact.
That was essentially the issue of what I said. I'm not aware of any current impact, but certainly if that were to be the case, we would want to take through and make sure that we were in fact acting in the best interest not only of the university, but of the individual.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to come speak with us. One more thing to the Joel friends and Dr. Miller. We really appreciate it. Now we can kind of take a quick turn and move back into Resolution 24, which is the first thing on our agenda today. And also, everyone in the audience or student assembly members, I can send out contact information if you have questions. Is that something that you would like me to do? Yes? Okay, great.
Yeah, and so the last thing I mentioned for Resolution 24 was just the severity and why you can get this serious thing. Then we get something like the variety of the current policy. And over the last couple weeks, Jordan and I have looked at alternatives, but we could make a system where only unexcused absences, or only unexcused absences are counted for the total. We could make something where you try to find every single appropriate aspect, which may be difficult. But after a lot of thought, we thought this was the system that would have the most longevity and it reflected the current practices, which I think we think are the best. I guess we can open up to any questions at this point.
Great. So I actually only got hold of one person who I knew wanted to speak, and that was Vikram, so he'll go first. And if you want to be on the speaker first, please raise your hand right now. Thank you. Vikram. Yeah.
This is the main
Move to the business day. There's been a second. Is there any dissent?
So now we can vote to move it to business of the day. Because I see no dissent, I am going to ask that we move it to business of the day by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? Seeing none.
Is that dissent?
Oh, that is dissent? Okay, sorry. Okay, so because there was dissent, we are going to have to move into voting on moving the citizens of the day. Jordan, is there something you would like to say? Yeah, because we cannot vote. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, I was
going to
say we can vote on this, but
yeah, so another explanation, which I'm going to expand on what Jordan was saying, for charter changes it becomes a little bit more complicated. If we're doing something as extreme as changing our charter, they do need to be on the agenda for two meetings. We can't vote on them right away. And also, it's important to just remember exactly what Jordan said. Great. So we are going to vote on this, though. So if you would like to move into the business of the day, please raise your glasses. If you would like to oppose moving into business of the day, please raise your placard. If you would like to abstain, please raise your placard. Okay, so by a vote of 23-0-0, this is business of the day. Now we can move on with our speakers list. I believe we're at Representative Kaufman. Could you grab a microphone?
During the time I realized that the judge
changing the words, that's what that's called. Yeah, so as we've gone through before, if you would like to propose an amendment to the resolution, in theory you should be contacting the sponsors of the resolution prior to the meeting, but you may propose it at the meeting by making a motion to amend and then stating the exact language that you would like to change. Is that clear? And you can motion to amend at any time.
Motion to amend.
Great. Do you want to explain exactly what you are changing the words to?
Do I have to have those words exactly?
Yes. You can withdraw your. I'll let you withdraw your motion, and you can bring it up when you have the language figured out. If that's what you'd like. All right. So there's an emotion. There's a motion on the floor. Would you like to explain it?
It says the starting.
Jordan, would you like to
respond? I always disagree and say that the students, they can't have any that person doesn't have the right to vote because you have a certain number of voting seats. And so you only have a right to vote if you're voting for me, but you don't have the voting seats, you don't have the right.
So if there is formal language that you would like to make, I don't think you've quite clarified that yet, because you might make a formal motion, you can make it now, we can vote on it, or I will still let you withdraw your motion. It's up to you. You can ask for a question, go for it.
Thank you.
I think that's what you're talking about, because line 23 is that we'll lose their right to vote,
yes.
And their decision will be easier to make.
Yes.
So, I think we're saying that if your decision is made, you do not have the right to vote.
Right.
Whereas if you refer to agency, by definition, agency implies, losing your ability to vote, and so if you refer to agency, you're averting their inability to vote. That's what we will be intended. I see what you're talking about in line 23, so you can clarify more.
So if that's so, then maybe we should change the charter to not lose the right to vote and their position will be considered vacated because if they're different things, then maybe we should have them separated.
Okay. So if you want to come up with the language right now, there is a speak group list forming for this amendment. So while you work on that, we'll have some other people speak. The first is Trustee Gitlin. Next is DOE Anaket.
I have a question. In the case that the senior is vacated, what is the contingency plan according to Mark or other people?
Yeah, so it's fairly complicated, but the charter spells it out so that the first avenue for contingency would be runner up in that same election. And so the problem becomes, if there's an uncontested election, the procedure after going to runner-up, which there wouldn't be any, is you have to open up the election to the undergraduate community. And if there's more than two people in 2 weeks that are interested in the seat, you have to run an election. But so if there's just one person that comes forward and says they're interested in the seat, they would just fill the seat automatically, I believe. But otherwise, it would turn into a special election for that seat.
Next person speaking on the amendment is Rep. Lisa Liu. Yeah. Okay. Gabe, would you like to make your formal motion now?
Yes. So Lisa Queen's on line 24. On line 24, Lisa Queen's vacancy and by, we should insert and a wall of right to vote. So the executive committee may alert such agency and loss of right to vote by a unanimous vote of all voting members of the executive committee.
Great. So we have expired the speakers list for this formal amendment. If there's anyone who would like to speak on this amendment or make a
motion to vote.
All right. There's a motion to vote on the amendment. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? There's dissent. Would you like to explain the dissent? You have 30 seconds.
I mean, I thought it was more of a broad suggestion, but either of you are accomplishing the same thing in your sentence.
So, I was wondering if I had important information.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Does this, does any, either of this language actually change the intention of the charter bylaws? Would there be any actual real in terms of whether or not someone's vote would actually be taken away? When I originally read it, it seems like we're throwing in words for semantic purposes. It doesn't actually change anything.
So I guess this is technically up to the interpretation of future assemblies, but based on my interpretation of this language that would be in our charter, I do not think that it would change the decision. Is that fair? All right. So, we have made a formal motion to vote. There has been dissent, so now we are going to vote on the amendment. This is the amendment that Dave proposed on line 23. Of course. So, Dave's amendment is the executive committee may avert such a vacancy and also the right to vote by a unanimous vote of all voting members of the executive committee. Oh, sorry.
And loss of
right to vote. Okay. So now that we are voting to vote, if you are in favor of voting on this amendment, please raise your placard. The thing, guys, can I clarify? We're not really withdrawing amendments anymore, so we kind of have to vote on it. And even if you do not want this amendment to pass, we have to turn it down. Does that make sense? Okay. So if you'd like to vote on this amendment, please raise your placard.
One.
If you would be opposed to voting on this amendment, please raise your placard. If you would like to abstain from voting.
Wait, sorry. Oh, you sure? No, correct.
No, I sent the right one. Okay, great. So, a vote of 21-2-1, we are going to vote on this amendment. So, if you are in favor of voting on this, if you are in favor of this amendment, please raise your placard. If you are opposed to this amendment, please raise your placard. If you would like to abstain on this amendment, please raise your placard. All right, so people left the room. People left the room, but by a vote of 8-11-1, it failed.
So starting on line 23, I'd like to strike from will, I'd like to strike will lose their right to vote and so that it will be read as to strike those words. So when you're reading it from 22, it would say, or persist regularly scheduled meetings cumulatively during their term, their position will be considered vacated. I think that's clear enough that if your position vacated, you can't vote.
Motion to vote.
So, there's a motion to vote on this amendment, and there is a second. Is there any dissent on this amendment? Seeing none, you can vote on the amendment. If you are in favor of this amendment, please raise your placard. If you are opposed to this amendment, please raise your placard. If you would like to abstain, please raise your placard. By a vote of 23-0-0, the amendment passes.
Okay. Motion to vote on the resolution.
There's a... I don't...
Okay.
You can't vote on... Well, it was moved to business of the day, but it's a charter change, so I think we need... I believe we need another week because usually it's 1 week. Actually, it always needs to be at least for 2 weeks, even if it's moved to business decision.
Motion to table that.
All right, so there's been a motion to table. Is there a second? You have to say when you want to table it until
next week's meeting.
Okay, so there's been a motion to table until next week's meeting. Is there a second? Great. So, if you are in favor of moving this to the next week's meeting, please raise your placard. By a vote of 24-0-0, we are going to move this to next week. And it will be business of the day next week, and we can vote on it then if you guys so choose. Moving on to Resolution 25. Will the sponsors, Blake Brown, William Bisky, and Spencer Nord, please come to the front of the room. Yes, you guys have 4 minutes to introduce your resolution, and then because it's two minutes, we can go into questions, answers, and non-argumentative comments. Is everyone else going on? Great. Go for it. So there's been a motion to move this to business of the day. Is there a second?
Dissent.
So there's dissent, and I can give you 10 to 30 seconds to explain your dissent.
Sure. I just think that there's some value in asking them questions first. That's our process, without giving it a sign of a color to what you think about it. Just giving them a chance to explain exactly where they're coming from, I think, would be the best way to go about this.
Nope. Moving on, we're going to have to vote to move this to business of the day because there was dissent. We're going to have to vote to move this to business of the day. I forgot a vote in there. So if you would like to vote to move this to business of the day, please raise your placard. If you are opposed to voting to make this business for a day, please raise your placard. Did everyone vote? I know. It did. Yeah, I know. Would anyone like to abstain? I know, but we're still missing someone. All right. By a vote of 15 to 10 to 0, we are going to vote on this. Great. Now, if you would like to vote in favor of moving to this to business of the day, please raise your placard. If you would like to not make this business of the day, please raise your placard. By a vote of 14 to 12 to 0, this passes, so we are going to move this to business of the day. First person on the speaker's list is D.C. Henderson.
Yeah, thank you guys for putting this together, and I know this is pretty early stages, but I was just wondering, in terms of investigation, what the goals are in terms of focus groups or surveys, whether it's going to be within the group, like within the committee, or reaching out to other people. I just wanted to know what you thought of.
I think there's something that happening that the committee is safe, but I think the best thing is to make it to reach out to the student body and kind of take a sense of the student body. Also, reach out to other schools of the group, but see what their policies are. But I think it's definitely engaging with the student body and being able to get into the supportive system, rather than just running the administrative policy.
I also think it's very important that people outside of the system have very basic day and communication with us. Because whether or not you are a member, we probably have affected in some way here at Cornell is 30% of the student body, and it's a big part of social activity. And the way that the system is set up is that it's a very good way of regulating the environment and ensuring that communication is between the alcohol. And when it's the support system, someone can make confidence in that.
So next is Representative Dow.
Hi guys, I just wanted to know, do you guys have any specific setups in terms of what exactly is going to be for the eventual reporting system? Like in terms of like the excellent aesthetic, the percentage of people that are going to be just, yeah, I mean,
Dean Hubble.
Just so you guys know, I wasn't clear about this before, but unless someone asks like a direct pressing question that you really want to answer right away, we're going to go to assembly or community speakers and then to you guys to save time. Is that all right? Great. So now you guys can respond. Next on our speakers list is Max Weisbrot.
I really think the assembly should hesitate on this one just because we're dealing with an issue that is extremely fraught on devices among student bodies. I think the investigation should happen, but instead of voting to create a committee that would then handle everything, it might be valuable in this particular case because of how divisive the issue is
You guys just respond to that now? Great. Go for it.
So, again, thank you for bringing up that concern. So, this body was produced with the recent formal report, and then it was brought to the investigation for the first course of the team, which is the end of the semester, to be voted upon, which immediately gave a class.
You have a couple of seconds if you want to respond. Remind student assembly members that if you want to be on the speakers list, you need to raise your placard. That is the only form of communication that will get you on this list. Great. First is Nikki Stefano.
So first of all, I just want to say that I'm happy that this is being brought up. I think students, especially Greek students, have been kind of flying in the dark when they're dealing with administrators, kind of with anecdotal information like, "Do you think this is bad?" But really not having anything to back that up. And I think having some sort of decision regarding whether or not it works is important, and I think this gets us there. I also have to respectfully disagree with Max's sentiments. Although I think it is important to understand the methodology, I think if we begin debating the methodology of this committee, it can get really muddy really quick, and I don't think that we're going to be able to take a lot of action. I think there should be a month or 2 months, 3 months sort of process where we're just deciding whether or not we want to begin an investigation. I think this is one of those moments where we have to, trust the, representatives that we're working with, that they're going to be doing their diligence on this, and that they understand that they have a lot tied to whether or not the methodology is unbiased, because if they bring a report that is not unbiased and there are, obvious mechanisms where they excuse the system or their methodology has been flawed, their report's going to get voted down and all the work they put into it isn't going to be relevant. So I think this is one of those moments where we have to trust the union representatives on the student assembly that they're going to be going about this in an appropriate manner. And I certainly appreciate that they're doing it. I think that once more questions have been asked, I think this is something that we should be moving forward with, and I'm happy that it was brought up.
Next is Rebecca.
Thanks for presenting the solution. I have some questions. Firstly, what have you guys done all the things with the system about measuring things? And secondly, what challenges have you detected that central space that the team members created for the system?
So I
guess
also, next is Rep. Goldman.
Thank you.
Can you guys wait for one more speaker? Next is DP Bhandari.
So my question is if you guys have already reached out to Chan Health and GLP and what their thoughts are on this, because that they're also influenced by, like, they're also affected by it. And if you reached out to the administrator, do you think they're perspective? You guys can go.
I think that as representatives, we're all working towards a certain resolution. Might not be on the top of everyone's list of priorities, whereas there's a committee with a definite timeline to terminate on the first half that we're by then. I think it's a sense of urgency. I think something that's going to be looked at is going to be reviewed and to go into your report rather than just representatives coming to you.
In regard to this, there are annual recruitment activities at the end of the second quarter. So, the panel I think runs from the sisterhood, the IIT runs the degree, and MDLT runs the free set, and a bunch of other sort of activities to involve freshmen and faculty members. So, their way of doing this is pretty much the same way as the IIT chapter, where IIT chapter represents the majority of
next on our speakers list is Rebecca Cabin.
Thank you for your time. Thank you very much for the presentation of what we're going to do because there are ongoing class closes. You mentioned that you said that it is my opinion, but that's what that is. But actually, people who are talking about the ones that we publicly feel that are the first, likely the last or the last one that they need. There might not be comments or member of comments in the community. I mean, they're pretty kind of examples of people who are going to be today and what's going on in the community. And my own question is that this is just about going into now, you that we only do it on papers.
So you said that is or isn't
a
law? But yeah, you can definitely make an amendment at this point in time to change that date to whatever you would like it to be, and also any member of the assembly may motion to amend at any time. Is that?
Yeah.
Great. Great. So what would the language be? So there's a formal amendment on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Great. So now we can go into discussion on the amendment itself. So if there's anyone who would like to be on the speakers list for this amendment, not the general resolution, please raise your hand. First, EDP to Chief Staff.
I think this is great. It makes logical sense. Give people have a time to respond and get a motion to vote on this amendment.
Great, so there's been a motion to vote. I think I heard a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, let's go into voting. Please raise your placard if you are in favor of this amendment. Please raise your placard if you're opposed. Please raise your placard if you'd like to abstain. By a vote of 24-0, this amendment passes. And now we can go back into discussion on the resolution in general. But did you guys want to continue speaking? I think you had like 1 minute left. No? Okay, great. Next on our speaker's list is Dee Dee.
So, in addition to working closer with the administration, I would also suggest that moving forward that we work closely with Anne Horn and Anne Delphi. Because those members of leadership do not know about this resolution whatsoever, and it affects all of us. So, full suggestion.
Great. So we're running low on time, so I am gonna be a little bit stricter about every two. Next on our speakers list is Representative Fridman.
Thank you.
This is such a great question, but I think that an assumption to say that we want to change the quarter system or abolish the quarter system, knowing it does say that there's unintended consequences, and that's just a bias that there may be a better solution, there may be an option, this may be the best solution, but I think to completely encourage that we do want to change it anyway or abolish it.
Initially, we're bringing this resolution to you guys as a general guidance to student body or concern. In no way the IIP specifically or the MOE specifically or NLA specifically bring this to you. It's more of a student body concern, and that's why I have all the best questions for you students that we have to approve this resolution.
Yeah, so just so you know, if you've spoken already, I'm going to let everyone else speak because I'm pretty sure every member of the assembly is on this list. Moving on to Representative Thacker.
Yeah, so I think a lot of
times
when definitely the quarter system, and I mean, all the other questions we talked about as well. But my opinion, I think the quarter system is very bad in construction, it's not always positive. OE, I think, no matter if it's going to be or not, a lot of questions go out, and you kind of see the consequences of why it's going to be all the time, and I think that actually the quarter system might stand in. I think it's, first of all, it's far more meaningful, and I personally, like, take on much more than I know this stuff happens in the college town, because we're being done on the influence, because that's in the college town. Also, the legal piece is kind of when you have these, like, legal things going on in dorms, like that is really good. There are a lot of JAs going on, especially during the coaching, and then there's a lot of other things that because everyone's running around college town. Also, a lot of people talk about community wedding committees. It's a convention upper class and middle class, and that's kind of class that convention. I know a lot of female friends who seem like a little illustrator talking to girls and stories. They feel like they can't even talk to certain girls because the ones who first want to talk to them is just stories and kind of doing at the beginning of the year, and also now the end of one. It's kind of also just like an idea of session. I don't know if it's better or but kind of anxiety is like not sure how it's going to happen in the future. And then, again, it's a lot of people who want to go in the future. Yeah, I just want to say that. Next question.
Motion to table to next week.
So there's been a motion to table until next week, and there has been a second. Is there any dissent? Yeah, so I have the speakers list. It's sort of illegible, but I'll write it over right now so that I can make sure I can go in the exact order in which you raise your hands. And just so you know, I have everyone on this list. If you raise your hand at some point, there are just a lot of you. Great. So because we are motioning to move this to next week, let's take a vote. If you'd like to move this to next week, please raise your placard. If you are opposed to moving this until next week, please raise your placard. If you'd like to abstain. By your vote of 22-1-1, we are going to move this next week. Thank you guys very much. There's been a motion to adjourn, and there's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, I am going to ask why you got upset. We adjourn the meeting.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.